In October's Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, we're talking beer and food. I'm Stella Fong. On Montana Avenue in Billings, new flavors are being brewed by Mike Urich of Carter's Brewing and Executive Chef Jeremy Ingelbretson of Lilac. In this month's show, we learn from Mike about craft beer. Then Chef Jeremy shares how beer is a great food partner, far more than the traditional ballpark frank. First, let's get to know Mike. What is his beer making background and education?
I've got no formal brewing education. Actually a retired journalist and had a hard time finding myself a job right out of school. It was in the middle of a recession and I'd been homebrewing at the time. And my father-in-law actually gave me a homebrewing kit shortly after I met his wife, or met my wife, his daughter. And so started brewing in our college apartment there, and then did that for like 3 or 4 years. And then my wife is from Billings up here, and I'm from Colorado. We went to school in Colorado. So when we come visit up here, I kind of started hanging out over at Yellowstone Valley, and also landed a assistant brewer job there, got my foot in the door with George over there, and then was head brewer there for 6.5 years. And then started Carter's in 2007, and we're in our 9th year now. So between my short stint home brewing and commercial brewing, it's been almost 20 years.
At some early point in your life, you tasted your first beer. When did that happen, and what was that beer?
The first beer I ever had, I don't think it was really enjoyable. It was a commercial beer, but the first beer that really like got me was Fat Tire, probably when I was 15.
15.
Yeah, I was at the ripe age of 15, and all my friends were probably, you know, underage drinking, just domestic stuff, whatever was cheapest. But I kind of fell in love with Fat Tire, and I was that kind of got me at a young age. So I never really went down the path of mediocrity at that point.
Well,
I kind of fell in love at that point.
You always had that elevated palate then.
Yeah, for some reason it just got me, and then went either downhill or uphill from there, depending upon how you look at it.
So when you go out to dinner with friends, what do you order to drink? Is it wine, beer, a fancy cocktail?
No, it's beer all the time. I'm so passionate about beer, and I'm so constantly wanting to learn more about it, taste more flavors. That's got my heart. I have appreciation for wine and spirits and all those other things, but beer is, you know, I'm a little judgmental and a little bit biased towards beer. So that's what I order.
Do you find yourself going out and looking at what other people do, what other brewmasters make?
Absolutely. I think the best way, regardless of whatever you're doing for a living, the better you can be a sponge, the better off you'll be as far as education. My entire life is probably going to be about learning and applying those things that I learned to what I do. Back when I was in college, our journalism professor was always saying, like, hey, keep your eyes open and see what other people are doing. It's not stealing. It's if you don't take advantage of what you're exposed to and to better yourself, you know, you're foolish. So kind of took that to heart, and just looking at examples of what other people would do, not necessarily to copy it, but for inspiration.
When you do go out and taste beers, do you also try to talk to the person who makes those beers?
Absolutely. If they're around, I try and, like I said, try and make the most of every experience that I possibly can have. I'm not a big fan of regret and wanting to say, well, I wish I would have spoken to so-and-so or asked questions about this. Any information I can possibly get or anything I can get for my own inspiration or just my own education.
Well, and then just having that camaraderie is probably really fun.
Yeah, the worst thing that can happen, you make a new friend.
Well, that's always a great thing to have somebody else on your side. What is your favorite beer? Do you have one?
Usually the one in front of me, but
I love that.
No, on a side note, other than that, I don't know. It depends. It varies so much. I almost have like kind of a an ADD when it comes to beer styles, because there's so much out there that I want to learn about and so many different things I want to try. There's a lot of styles I don't really like, but until you try them, you don't know that. So I'm constantly trying new things.
So you began with about, what, 500 barrels of production?
Yeah, we started our first year, we did 500 barrels. And
what are you up to now?
You know, we're at about 1,500 right now. We'd be much more than that, but we're lacking space right now.
How many different styles?
We have 17 on all the time. 17 different styles on all the time. Probably the most diverse lineup in the entire state.
So when did you serve your first pint of beer?
July 17th of 2007. That was the first one we actually sold. You know, we had a few people coming in, like during construction, stuff like that. Once we had some product available, we were giving out some samples, but we sold our first one July 17th of 2007.
That is just absolutely amazing. Your business model for Carter's Brewing is beer engineered and conducted with passion. Derailed, Golden Spike, Lost Train are some of the names you have labeled your beers. How did you come up with these names? And I love the fabulous, creative, fun labels you have.
You know, all of our branding and our marketing, we had CTA architects and engineers do our plans and stuff when we first opened. And they have an in-house graphics department, which is just awesome. Very small, but Jenna Granada is our graphic artist, and she does a great job. And she's very creative, and I kind of just had a spitball session with her and a couple of her colleagues, and within a couple of weeks, they had some ideas, and we just started kind of brainstorming. We knew we were going to do a railroad-themed brewery.
Well, your location, you're right there by the tracks.
Yeah, if we had a building across town, we'd have a totally different theme. But being right there on the tracks, it was a natural. And then ironically, when Carter was growing up, he was really into trains at an early age. So it was pretty ironic that everything kind of fell into place. And so our branding is very easy. Doesn't take a lot of thinking. I mean, we have more ideas than what we can actually put to fruition.
I'm sure you do.
Coming up with beer names and stuff like that it's very, very, very easy. Some of it's railroad themed, but we're also starting to get away with that on some of our other styles as well.
I'm seeing some farm themes, some seasonal. I see chickens.
Yeah, I have a ton of creative ideas in my head, and a lot of those just come out at random times. And
it must be hard to contain yourself.
It is, yeah. It's a weird little sickness.
So, as far as ideas go, what about your beer making style? How do you contain all your enthusiasm for doing different types? I'm sure you're open minded to many different things, but what is your style?
Well, we tend to be a little more. We push the envelope on some things. We do some beer styles that may not be Billings top sellers initially, and that's by design. That's not just to be different, but that's also stuff that I want to make. I want to test it out. I want to see what people think, what the response is. And the worst thing that can happen is you come out with something that doesn't sell as well as everything else.
What sells the best?
You know, right now, IPAs are a huge craze, but the Belgian-style beers have really had a renaissance kind of locally. Initially, when we first started making Belgian beers, they didn't sell so well. I don't know if Billings Market was ready for them, but 9 years later now, those same people are religious followers of that style. So I think that we've played a big part in converting or at least educating people about those styles. Let them try it, and ultimately, once they try it, we think that our product is world-class, and right then, that just totally opens up the entire world for them.
What are some of the more edgier products you're bringing to the market?
Well, you know, I mean, we do brew IPA, but we do it differently. We use a lot of different ingredients that some of the other brewers aren't using.
Such as?
Just different hop varieties, you know. We tend to make a lot of our beers drier, which helps to be more drinkable on the palate. And ultimately, that's what we're out for, is just the enjoyment of the experience. So we'll try to make pretty much all of our beers, regardless of style, to be dry and drinkable.
Last night, I was at Lilac, and I tasted your hibiscus sour. Lilac called it a collaboration sour. Tell me about your sours and your collaboration with Jeremy Engelbretson across the street from you.
Jeremy and I met him right before his restaurant was open. I walked over there when he was doing construction on the place. He had bought the Asian restaurant over there and was converting it to Lilac, and I didn't know him at all at the time. And once he got open, you know, I kind of went over there and see if he was interested in putting our beer on tap. We didn't know each other, but we're very similar minded as far as being very creative and very, very passionate, very driven about what we do. And I think our friendship sparked up pretty much immediately. And he's become my best friend now. I mean, but I think there's just this common artisan fiber that we share. And he, owning the restaurant, wine is pretty dominant in restaurants as far as pairing with food. And I'm a brewer that's trying to grow beer culture. And I wasn't trying to convert him, but I was mainly just trying to, say, educate him about beer. Right. He knew he liked beer and liked to drink beer, but kind of exposing him to a lot of beer styles that he wasn't really aware of, it was just, he's really embraced that. And I think he's enjoying that as much as he did wine. So we've kind of collaborated on beer dinners and just being friends and just running our businesses across the street from each other.
Right.
I think that it's just been a pretty natural relationship that just sparked up, like I said, being two passionate entrepreneurs, two artists. And when we started really to do more sour beer production and build a market for it, he had never really had sour beer. And so I think it kind of got him.
Tell us a little bit about sours.
Sours are really a growing style nowadays, especially among craft brewers. But sour beers are actually the oldest style of beer out there. Sours were...
they were created with just wild yeast.
Wild yeast. A lot of sour beers were prevalent, you know, way before brewer's yeast was discovered. Wild yeast would ferment things, and that's how beer kind of came to be. So it's a really old way of making beer, and we have all these modern techniques and stuff nowadays. But really, it's actually kind of a reverse. It's a turn back in history, and it's something that's very old world, very traditional, very complex, and a lot of brewers don't really want to get into that because there's the unknown of wild yeast.
Right.
But we've kind of taken that challenge on there. One, because I like to drink sour beer, and the best way to learn about it is to make it, to learn, make mistakes. I mean, just to kind of jump in with both feet.
So when you and Jeremy get together to create these dinners that you do at the restaurant, how does that come about? Is it really he comes over and tastes your beer, or you sit down at his restaurant and you come up with a menu? How does that evolve?
Well, he's a phenomenal chef, and he can create flavors for anything to match anything. So we'll get together and have a brainstorming session. Usually does not take long. Free-flowing ideas, we kick things around. We've gone and traveled together and tried other beer pairings, seen stuff that works, stuff that doesn't work. And like I said, he's learning about how to pair beer with food. And I'm kind of learning from him flavors and food that go really good with beer. So we're kind of teaching each other,
I think.
And without really knowing that, we're kind of learning a lot from each other, gaining a much more fond appreciation for what the other person does.
The craft beer brewing scene is growing. In downtown Billings, there are walking tours, 6 breweries, including yours. What do you think of the growing craft brewing scene here in Billings?
I think it's great. When we opened, we were the 4th brewery. You know, now it's doubled in just a short period of time. I think that the consumer ultimately is the winner. The more choices for the consumer, the healthier the market, whether it's food, whether it's coffee, whether it's beer. Everything adds to the culture. You know, Billings is where I have my home, where I want to stay, and where I want to see thrive. And I think that the breweries is just one aspect of that community that's just been so positive. It's happening with coffee. It's happening with restaurants. You know, all those things are going to help build Billings to be stronger.
I think so. Maybe there might be a Mason's Brewing Company at some point in the future.
I don't know. I think we're busy with Carter's right now.
Mike, thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Thank you.
We are supported by Zonta Club of Billings, dedicated to advancing women's education, equality, health, and wellness, providing grants for community agencies, student scholarships, local nonprofit assistance, and awareness and education for domestic violence and human trafficking.
Now that we heard a brewmaster's take on beer and food, let's hear from a chef. Jeremy Ingebretson owns Lilac. Let's meet him and then get his ideas on food and beer.
You know, when we opened up the restaurant, I wanted to kind of do something which I feel is getting a little bit forgotten in today's dining scene, of this concept of taking nothing and making something from that, cooking from the ground up. And so, you know, when we opened up, we wanted to do that and do it in as responsible way as possible and use as many local purveyors as we could get our hands on.
And so do you get the product in and just say, this is what I'm going to do with it, or do you actually think about it and then order the product?
It's kind of both. You know, we'll do something like, say we have X on the menu, I don't know, pork loin. And so we'll say we need, whatever, 40 pounds of pork loin this week. Or it'll be like, let's buy a pig. And then we'll get a pig and say, okay, we have all these pieces now that we broke down. What are we going to do with them?
Well, which is great that you can have that ability. You know, that really takes a high level of, I would say, chefdom to be able to do that.
It takes a market, too. I'm really glad that we're able to, you know, get rid of things like head. That
right. But well,
like.
because like pozole is made with that. It just gives you a nice different dimension to it when you actually use it for stews or look for the meats that's in that.
Yes.
Area of yes. The animal. Where do you get your inspirations for your food?
You know, a lot of things. I like to kind of keep on what's current and popular in the nation, I guess the world, but mostly the nation. And there's some people I like to follow and what they're doing in the restaurants. I also kind of like to travel a little bit and see, you know, what I like that's out there that I haven't had for a while or could do better, things like that.
Well, you just got back from New York and Los Angeles and Nashville, I understand. Yeah, what were some of your highlights?
It was a good year. Los Angeles had a lot to show. It's been a while since I've been over there, and so I was really pretty blown away with the food that they were doing there. I think the highlight of the trip was definitely Michael Voltaggio's Inc. restaurant. They did a really, really good job for us, and everything was delicious. Nashville was also great. Husk restaurant, I was able to go there as well as a few places, but those guys really basically sent out the whole menu twice, and just everything was so humble yet perfect. It's kind of funny, over the last couple of years people ask what sort of food we do, and it's sort of like, well, we try to do fancy farm food just from our region. And so the guys at Husk, you know, they're taking these things like rice and beans that are heirloomy and sourced correctly and grown with a lot of care, and then doing something with them that's not necessarily crazy out of the box, but just executed so well and still approachable to people that it's a great experience.
Well, and paying attention to how you cook it so that you highlight the flavors and textures to its optimal point, so people are surprised. Things aren't boiled to death.
Buried down under 75 layers, yeah.
Well, I'm sure you found that in California, too, just for the pure availability of all of the products that are out there.
We went to the Santa Monica Farmers Market, and it was just borderline ridiculous, the products that you can just get every single day. Kind of envious from a Zone 4 climate, but...
But are you sure you need 75 different types of tomatoes?
Not here. No, that's not what we do.
Or corn or herbs. It is a really beautiful farmer's market, and I'm sure you saw a lot of the local chefs there shopping for their restaurants.
We saw the guy from the night before at the market. It was kind of surreal.
Yeah, that is great, to be inspired like that. In the world of beer, most people think of hot dogs or sausages slathered with mustard and relish as the perfect food partner. But I believe we need to be more open-minded. Over the years, you have offered food and pairing dinners at Lilac. Your partner in crime has been Mike Urich of Carter's Brewing. So why don't we talk about the different types of beer? So I want to just talk about ales, lagers, and stouts and porters. And I am curious as to what you would pair with these particular types of beers. Ales tend to be have malty aromas and fruit characteristics, and they're more robust and complex. What would you partner with this beer?
I think ales is a really good place to start because that's usually the class that gets the most hops of everything. And hoppy beers, IPAs and pale ales and things really have really the one thing that wine can't do very well, and that is to pair with spicy food. So, you know, something like an IPA we'll take and we'll do something like a kimchi dish or a spicy chili dish or something that we couldn't really do at a pairing very well otherwise if it wasn't with beer. So yeah,
because those spices would just kill the wine.
Yeah, nothing really plays nice with spice in the wine world. But, you know, we take if we did, say, the derailed IPA, and the last dinner we did, we took a chicken wing and boned it out and stuffed it with Chinese sausage and chili sauce and green onion. And it paired really nicely. I mean, it was spicy, not over the top. Same with the beer. IPAs can be so hopped, just so hop heavy and not balanced. But a nice balanced IPA with a nice balanced spicy dish, it's a really great, unique pairing.
Well, in the dish you described, it also had the sausage, which had a little sweetness to it. Was it that kind of Chinese sausage?
Yeah, we stuffed it with that sort of warming clove anise sort of thing.
Which pairs well with those ales, with the IPAs.
Yes.
Because
yes,
they have all those herbaceous notes to it.
And if you want to get away from the hoppy things, you know, like ambers and that sort of thing are also in the ale category. And that's a really nice classic pairing with flavors that America loves, such as barbecue, you know, smoke, that sort of flavor. We did a Korean short rib braise, like a fermented chili, like a sweeter fermented chili barbecue sauce that was really caramelized and smoky and just beautiful with an amber.
Was this an Asian fermented chili sauce, or where did that come from?
I would try to pronounce it, but I don't know how to do it. But yeah, it's just a fermented chili paste product that we turn into a sauce, a barbecue sauce.
All right. So you're being very creative and exploratory.
Trying.
With that. So let's move on to lagers. This was a German beer that was stored and traditionally kept in near freezing temperatures for a long time, so it had a long time to ferment. Its characteristics are pretty crisp and refreshing with a very smooth finish. And there is a beer company that has made a lot of money from this type of beer with a lot of frogs and dancing girls.
Yes.
And it's just a beloved beer, especially in America. What do you join with this particular beer?
A Pilsner is like my favorite beer to drink, like a nice hoppy craft Pilsner. Very clean, like you said, and crisp. Lagers are really full of finesse. I like them. I like to see craft lagers because they're harder to make. They take longer time. They ferment slower at lower temperatures. I mean, to do it super classic, you need the special lagering tanks. Like all these things that are these extra steps that people skip a lot of times. I think that's why I like them so much. Kind of maybe reflects in the cooking that we do. But, the lighter, the crisper stuff that's out there, there's a reason it's classic. There's a reason it's paired with stuff like you mentioned, bratwurst, you know, stuff that's really good, homemade food, the roast chicken, clean flavors and stuff like that. But it's easy to kind of get stuck in that sometimes. You know, you can look at something, and if it was wine and it's the same idea of like crisp, clean, refreshing, you're not going to necessarily just stop it at bratwurst and roast chicken. You can take the same flavor profiles, you know, with like seafood or citrus, biscuit notes, like toasty, bready notes, that sort of thing, and really do as interesting food as you want to do with it.
Well, and the thing with lagers is that it's such a clean beer that it almost could be the champagne of beers because...
Sure can.
I'll put quotes around that champagne. But meaning that it may be a beer... And I think the bubbles and some of the light flavors of it kind of holds up, but it is probably one of the cleaner beers that you could have with, as you said, seafood. So your boiled seafood with what you had said, citrus or lemons, that this is the one that you could almost have with sushi and it would go quite well.
Sapporo, man, there's a reason it's up there.
Yeah, so, you know, people don't think of that. Again, you know, the hot dogs and mustard and it just clobbers the beer, but you certainly can finesse it so that it becomes a really beautiful partner with your food.
Yes.
So let's move on to stouts and porters. Tends to be darker and richer. Porters almost have a fruity, dry characteristics, whereas stouts are not as sweet, and they tend to have a creamy head and develop coffee characteristics. What would you do with these types of beers?
You're kind of safe, in my opinion, to do a little bit of the same idea with both of these if you're trying to go from the standpoint where it's like the malt in them is roasted harder, it's darker, it imparts like that roasty, kind of dry chocolatey flavor in there. It's stouts, generally speaking, are the safe go-to bet on desserts. One thing I like about stouts, especially if they're a little bit dry and just like a little bit of hop in them so they stand out a little bit, is that they pair nicely with sweet things. So one of my favorite things to do with a stout, for example, is to take the wort from the beer before it's fermented out and turn that into a caramel.
And, so, and this is your connection from across the street.
Yeah, you can just take a bucket across there and ask for some before it's fermented. Definitely handy being across the street from a brewery.
What about just the beer itself? Have you made floats or used it to reduce to make a sauce?
We've actually done a chocolate stout sauce, which is not novel by any means, but it's still delicious. The last float that we did was actually a framboise, so not quite the stout category, but it was still good.
Did you do a raspberry ice cream, or did you just put framboise into the beer?
We did framboise. I think we did framboise sorbet as well, and then some fresh raspberries and raspberry ice, I want to say, on that as well.
That sounds delicious. Very refreshing.
Very refreshing, yeah.
What other beers do you like to pair with food?
You know, I'm a really, really big fan of love it or hate it beer of the sour category. We have one on tap that I helped blend with Mike across the street. It's just something that it's age old, not very popular yet, although it's coming around right now. And, they're, you know, aged for a long time, usually in an oak barrel with wild yeast. And so they get all this acetic acid and lactic acid and get all sour and
puckery.
Yeah. And, one of the few times I like to do contrast profile instead of compliment is with a sour beer, because you take it and it just goes so well with sugar. It's really interesting. We did an event with the Depot a couple of years ago where we had to pair a beer and a food, and I chose to do a dessert which was like a maple foie gras cream with a little donut or something like that. And paired it with a sour, which was exactly the opposite flavor profile. We had more than one person say like, oh, that sour really wasn't for me. But when I ate the dessert, it made a lot of sense. And so that was really cool to see.
So maple foie gras, you actually put liver into the cream?
Yeah, more than one occasion. It's very rare that I use that product anymore, but man, I sure do like
it. So you're just doing a different type of butter in some ways.
Yeah, you could really think of it like that. Yeah, yeah, butter.
Liver almost coats your tongue, just kind of prepares you for that sour attack from the from the beer.
Yeah. Okay, it's very, love it or hate it, but I'm definitely in the love it category.
I love the contrast because it just keeps your palate going from one place to the other, and it can't get tired because you're really just pounding it with great pungency and flavor.
Keeps it all interesting to itself.
Mm-hmm. It's all great. Well, Chef Jeremy, thank you so much for being with me today, and I just love the food that you produce at Lilac.
Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
The producer of Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, is Jackie Yamanaka. Our theme music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this program and links, go to our website, ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.